underway. And Anna, do you want to do the roll call?
First, let's pass it off to Peter to say a few things, John, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the appropriative pool. This is the regular pool meeting of Thursday, May 14, 2020. We will be taking a roll call out of necessity because of the way we're doing business with a go-to meeting. Before we get to the roll call, a bit of housekeeping items, our usual reminders, to help you have as effective a meeting as you can. We ask everyone to please keep your phone on mute unless you're speaking, and then mute again when you're done speaking. I can't stress enough how important that is. That can be very disruptive, and it can actually stop the meeting. So please be very mindful to mute your line. Please remember to introduce yourself before speaking, and especially if you're going to be making a motion or offering a second to support a motion. As I mentioned, Anna will be doing a roll call, and for those that are participating whose names are not called, if you'd like your attendance captured in the minutes, please email Anna directly. There is a confidential session scheduled for this meeting. When it's time for that, please disconnect from this go-to meeting and dial the separate number that you've been given for that phone call. After the confidential session, please log back in. This go-to meeting will be available to you, so you can log back in, you can call in, or you can log in via the link. All of that is shown at the top of the agenda, and you should be able to see that on your screen right now. So the meeting will continue after the confidential session on this go-to line. Once again, if you join the confidential session, we ask that you disconnect from the go-to meeting so there is no inadvertent confidential session communication that is overheard in this go-to meeting. Please remember this is a regular meeting of the appropriative pool, and it is being recorded. You can see the recorder, and you can see when it's running. You should be able to see that on your screen as well. We understand this is a little bit choppier than being able to meet in person, and we really appreciate your patience and your understanding while we do business this way. And unless anyone has any questions, we can begin the meeting now. Hearing
all right,
none,
thank
Anna,
you.
Please proceed with the roll call.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Okay, I'll be calling roll for today's May 14th, 2020 appropriative pool meeting. Arrowhead Mountain Spring Water Company. CalMat Company. City of Chino Hills.
Craig's on, Anna.
City of Chino.
Dave Crosley.
Cucamonga Valley Water District.
John Bosler.
Fontana Union Water Company. Fontana Water Company. City of Fontana. Golden State Water Company. Aruba Community Services District.
Chris Church.
Marigold Mutual Water Company. Monta Vista Irrigation Company.
Banju.
Monta Vista Water District.
Bannigan.
NCL Company. Niagara Bottling. Nicholson Trust. City of Norco, City of Ontario,
Katie Ginger,
City of Pomona,
Chris Davis.
San Antonio Water Company, County of San Bernardino, Santa Ana River Water Company, City of Upland,
Even Ledbetter.
West End Consolidated Water Company.
Also Steve Ledbetter.
West Valley Water District. All right, that concludes roll call.
Okay, thank you. Next is additions and reorder to the agenda. Peter, do you have any?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any additions to the agenda. I do have a suggestion for your pool committee is that if it's acceptable to the committee, that we'd ask that the legal, engineering, and CFO reports be given first. It is possible that both Andy and Brad may have to disconnect from the call at some point later today. We might be better off getting that out of the way now.
Yes, we would like to do that, and also on the business items, we'd like to have closed session after those reports, but we do want to hear the presentation on business item A, but we will not act on that until after closed session, and then the rest of the items we will act after closed session as well and hear those at that time.
Very good.
Okay, thank you. So our next item is the consent calendar. Do I have a motion to approve it?
Chino Hills moves approval. Ron Craig.
Dave Crosley, Chino second.
Okay, Chino Hills first, Chino second. And Peter, if I believe, I'm just going to ask for anybody who opposes it, correct? Is that the better way of doing this?
That's up to you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe your counsel has some advice on that.
I think that's what we did last time. John, I think that's fine.
Okay. So does anybody oppose the motion to approve the consent calendar? Okay, hearing none, consent calendar passes. So let's go ahead and, Peter, if we can, hear the updates from legal, engineering, and CFO, and then after that, if we can hear business items A, and then we'll go into closed session if that's okay.
Very good. First would be legal counsel report. Brad?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the pool committee. Couple items this morning. First, in regard to the San Bernardino County Superior Court emergency order, since we were last together like this, the emergency order has been extended through May 28th, rescheduling all non-emergency matters through May 28th. And additionally, non-emergency filings will not be accepted by the clerk during that same time frame. For the same reason, our hearing, which had initially been scheduled for March 20th, has now been scheduled for June 26th at 1:30 p.m. in Judge Riker's courtroom. There are six motions that are currently on calendar for that hearing. They include a Water Master status report on the OBMP update, the requests for the court to receive and file semi-annual OBMP status report, requests for the court's approval of amendments to the judgment relating to compensation of advisory and pool committee members, as well as the Ag Pools motion regarding its pooling plan. And a couple other receive and file motions relating to annual reports and Ground Level Monitoring Committee annual report. Any questions on the court's emergency order or the June 26th hearing? Okay. The last item I had is just an item of note that we're tracking. Given how you all follow water issues, you probably received a number of emails or have seen other posts in various online places related to the County of Maui versus Hawaii Wildlife Fund Supreme Court decision that came down on April 23rd. It deals with Clean Water Act and whether a discharge permit would be required of the County of Maui to dispose its treated wastewater through groundwater discharge wells where that discharged water ultimately reached the Pacific Ocean. The lower court, including the Ninth Circuit, had used a test that they called a fairly traceable standard, which said that if the discharge was fairly traceable to the act or the eventual arrival of that that contaminant into a navigable water of the U.S. was fairly traceable to an activity, then that would require a permit. The Supreme Court struck kind of a middle ground determination here and looked at what they call a functional equivalent of a direct discharge, which was the middle ground between the fairly traceable standard or a bright line groundwater exclusion rule that was sought by the EPA. It's unclear exactly what that functional equivalent standard is going to look like in practice. There will be necessary regulation coming from the federal agencies on that. There are a number of factors that the Supreme Court said might be relevant to that, including transit time, distance traveled through groundwater, extent to which a pollutant is diluted or changes as it's as it travels, among seven different factors that they enumerated. And so we'll continue to monitor how future court decisions and the administrative rulemaking process will apply this new functional equivalent test and how it might apply in the basin. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Do we have any questions or comments? All right, hearing none, let's move on to the engineering report.
Good morning, everybody. This is Andy. I have four items, and my first item has a presentation. Anna, is my voice audible?
It is.
Okay,
we hear you thank
you. Thank you. The first item is on the annual report of the Prado Basin Habitat Sustainability Committee. We had a committee meeting yesterday online. It was a long presentation that summarized the main findings of the report. And today I'm going to give you a brief summary and just hit the highlights. Anna, can you go to the next slide, please? I'm going to give you a little bit of background as to why this report and this monitoring program is performed in the first place. This is a map that you see of the Prado Basin area. The Prado Basin is defined on this map by that orange outline, which is the 566-foot elevation line. And it defines a flood control basin behind Prado Dam. This is also the very distal area of the Chino Basin. And groundwater gets very shallow in this area. So shallow that groundwater can surface and become surface water discharge that can flow out of the basin through the Prado Dam down to the Orange County area. It is also so shallow that riparian vegetation can feed off of the shallow groundwater. And in this air photo here, you see some of the darker green areas on the air photo. That is riparian vegetation. That lives in the Prado Basin and also provides critical habitat for a number of endangered and threatened species. You see some polygons on this map here for the critical habitat that's been designated for the Santa Ana sucker, the southwestern willow flycatcher, and the least bells vireo, which is a songbird. And so they live off of this habitat. The yellow squares that you see across the top of the map is the Chino Basin Desalter well field. And this well field, of course, as you know, is performs a very important function in the basin. Not only does it pump contaminated groundwater and treats it and serves it as municipal water supply, but it also controls the groundwater levels in this area. As I said, there's shallow groundwater in this area. This is an area that is converting from urban, from agricultural land uses into urban land uses. And as that conversion occurs, the agricultural production goes away. And if it was not replaced by this municipal well field here, groundwater levels would rise, and we'd have more outflow of groundwater that would be a loss of yield from the Chino Basin. And not only would it be a loss, but that groundwater is high in TDS, high in nitrates and other contaminants, and it would degrade the quality of the Santa Ana River and potentially impact the downstream beneficial uses of the Santa Ana River. So that well field performs a very valuable function in controlling the groundwater levels. There's also another groundwater management program that's going on that we refer to as basin reoperation, which is the controlled overdraft of 400,000 acre feet of groundwater in the Chino Basin that will assist the DeSalter well field in controlling groundwater levels down here and performing its function to control groundwater levels and maintain the yield of the basin. Those two components, the expansion of this well field and the basin reoperation, those are the two main elements of what we call the Piece 2 agreement. And during the CEQA process for the Piece 2 agreement, one of the potential impacts of the agreement would be lowering groundwater levels to the extent in this area that we might adversely impact the riparian habitat. So a monitoring and mitigation measure that was implemented to address that potential impact was this monitoring program and the annual reporting program. And this is our fourth annual report that we're reporting on, and I'm going to give you the highlights of that of the report now. Next slide, please. This is the table of contents of the annual report, and it kind of lays out the monitoring program for you. The first section is just background and objectives, and that typically doesn't change from year to year. Section 2 is a description of the monitoring program over the past year. And Section 3 reports on the results and interpretations from the monitoring program. The monitoring program can just best be described as, first of all, an analysis of the riparian habitat itself and how it's changing over time, and then a series of sections on the potential factors that can stress the riparian habitat. And, of course, the one that we're concerned most about with regard to the Piece 2 agreement is groundwater, and specifically changes in groundwater levels. But we also look at other things like surface water discharge coming down Chino Creek and Mill Creek in the Santa Ana River, and climate, and other factors such as invasive species. And so we look at all of these things together so we can tell the difference between groundwater impacts and other impacts on the habitat. And lastly, we use the Chino Basin groundwater flow model to look out into the future for any potential areas where we might have groundwater level declines in the vicinity of the riparian habitat that that might concern us. So that's basically the monitoring program and the analysis that goes into the report. We finish off the report with conclusions and recommendations, and typically have a recommendation for what the monitoring program should look like in the following fiscal year. Go to the next slide, please. I'm showing you one of the figures in here that describes how the riparian habitat has changed over time. We use remote sensing data, which is freely available, and we analyze it for what's called the NDVI. It's an index that indicates the overall health or greenness of the vegetation in Prado Basin. And so what you're seeing there is four maps across the top that that is the interpretation of the NDVI in the Prado Basin. But we also look at it in time series, and that's what you're seeing in the chart below. And what this chart is telling us is that overall in the Prado Basin, we have not seen a degradation in the riparian habitat that is coincident with the implementation of the Piece 2 agreement. And in fact, over this past year, if you look to the right of that chart, you see an overall greening of the riparian habitat. And we see this almost across the entire Prado Basin over this past year. And we have some explanations as to why that occurred. Can you go to the next slide, please? We also look at groundwater levels very closely. We have a monitoring program that was augmented in 2015 with the construction of additional shallow monitoring wells, which are shown by the yellow and black circles that are located strategically next to the riparian habitat and south of the DeSalter well field. And we track groundwater levels very closely and create maps. And what you're seeing here on this map is a change in groundwater elevation from 2016 to 2019. And generally, we're seeing very little change in the Prado Basin, a little bit of decline in the along the northern reaches of Mill Creek and the Santa Ana River. And so we track that very closely in this report. But essentially, what we're reporting is very little change in groundwater elevations since we've been monitoring closely since 2016. Next slide, please. These are groundwater model results of projected changes in groundwater elevations from the year 2018 to the year 2030, which is when the Peace and the Peace II Agreement term out. And so what we're also projecting here is very little change across most of the Prado Basin along the northern reaches of Mill Creek and the Santa Ana River. We are projecting about 1 to up to 3 feet of water level declines. We don't think that these are would result in significant adverse impact to the riparian vegetation based on what we know water levels are in these areas today. So one of the conclusions of the report is that we don't see prospective adverse impacts to the riparian habitat. But these are model results, obviously, and our monitoring program will back that up in the future if that is the case. Go to the next slide, please. So lastly, I'll just review some of our main conclusions and recommendations that we saw a greenness in the riparian vegetation over the past year across most of Prado Basin. We think that it was the cooler, wetter conditions in 2019 and increases in stream discharge down Mill Creek, Chino Creek, and the Santa Ana River that were the cause of the observed increases in the greenness of the riparian vegetation. As I stated before, groundwater levels have remained relatively stable, and so we have not been able to tie changes in groundwater levels to any of the changes that we're seeing in the riparian habitat just yet. And that the monitoring program should continue. We make some recommendations in there. We've been closely collaborating with OCWD already. We feel like this is a place where some of our objectives overlap with OCWD, especially with regard to monitoring of the riparian habitat. And we think that there might be places where we can collaborate even more closely in that monitoring program and achieve efficiencies and reduce costs for both agencies. And lastly, we have to make the statement that that there's no mitigation measures recommended as necessary at this point in time, mitigation measures for implementation of the Peace II Agreement. So we've made that recommendation each year, and we continue to make that recommendation in this annual report too. So with that, the draft report is out. It is published on Watermaster's website. You should have all received an announcement of that from Anna. We had the meeting yesterday. We have two more weeks where we can accept comments and suggested revisions on the annual report. Can you go to the next slide, please, Anna? And so May 27th is the deadline for receiving such comments and suggested revisions. And we plan on publishing the final report on June 4th to the Water Master's website. I'm happy to take any questions on that. Okay.
Hi, Andy. This is Ron Craig. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, I participated in the meeting yesterday. I was, as you said, very extensive and well done with the information that was presented. I just wanted to clarify that for today that the original EIR and the model and the projections that were associated with that as it relates to groundwater levels did project that through our reoperation we would have a reduction in groundwater levels, but it would be anticipated to not be of a consequence to this habitat. And that the current readings that you have, along with your updated model that you're applying now, are showing that those groundwater levels are within, you know, or actually higher than what was projected to be a lowering of the groundwater levels with the programs of the OBMP. Just clarifying that. But I think that's the case, and that's a good thing. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was a good report, Andy. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. All right, thank you. I'll move on with the rest of my report. These are very brief verbal reports. IUA and Water Master are co-permittees on the groundwater recharge permit with the regional board, which is the regulator along with the DDW on the recharge, especially of recycled water. IUA prepares quarterly and annual reports, and we review them as the co-permittee. And so we're in the process of reviewing that annual report right now, just reporting to you that that's happening. On SB 88 compliance, Water Master holds permits with the State Water Resources Control Board to divert and recharge stormwater and dry weather flow. SB 88 is a law that added a certain monitoring and reporting requirements. As you may know, IUA performs the monitoring and estimation of recharge and reports that to Water Master, and then Water Master reports those findings to the state board. So what we're doing right now is we're reviewing some of IUA's methods and the data and the assumptions that go into those estimates of stormwater and dry weather flow recharge, and we're making recommendations for improvements so that we are in compliance with the SB 88. And lastly, going back to the CDA well field, the CDA is collaborating with the County of San Bernardino to expand the desalter well field in the area of the Chino Airport TCE and TCP plume, where extraction wells would be drilled and extract the water, and the CDA would treat the water. So it would have that dual purpose of cleanup of the plume and then the final expansion of the well field. The DDW requires an analysis of the 10-year capture zone for this new well field and the quality of groundwater within the capture zone. And they're exploring, asking Water Master to help with this compliance, since Water Master has recently updated its modeling tools and planning assumptions for the safe yield recalculation. So we would use the updated model to provide estimates of what that capture zone is and then provide the water quality information to the CDA so they can comply with the DDW regulation. We've provided CDA with a cost estimate, and we're coordinating with them, and currently they're considering it. And that is my report. I'm happy to take any questions on any of those topics.
All right, hearing none. Thanks, Andy, for the report.
All right.
Next, we have the CFO report.
Thank you, and good morning, members of the appropriate pool. My report is on the fixed rate refunding of Series 2008B variable rate demand bonds. The Chino Basin Regional Financing Authority is currently underway with a proposed fixed rate refunding of the IUA 2008B variable rate demand bonds. While these series bonds have performed well since inception, today's interest rate environment provides IUA an opportunity to refund these bonds at a fixed rate. So IUA is in the process of working on trying to get all of this taken care of. The fixed rate in today's market is estimated at 1.442%. The fixed rate is based at the time of pricing. So while some of the documents show that it's 1.442, that's as today's rate. It could certainly be different when it gets actually to the time of getting those rates locked in. The reason the fixed rate obviously provides stability when budgeting for Water Master, and also provides and eliminates the variability rate risk. Now, why is that important? It's important because part of the Water Master budget each fiscal year is the recharge improvement debt service, which is captured under account 7690.1. And for fiscal year 2020-2021, the amount is budgeted at $534,196. So Water Master does participate in these variable rates. We do pay principal and interest each year, and if I could have you click to the next slide, please. This is some information that's provided by PFM, and you can see basically their interest rate calculation, 1.442. They also provide just a very brief some of the positive reasons why swapping out these rates or these bonds is beneficial. And then finally, Janine, if I could have you go to the last slide, please. This is the calculations of what the current debt service is. And you can see by looking at the chart, the fiscal years go all the way from June 30, 2021 through June 30 of 2032. You can see under the variable rate, the middle column, the amount that Water Master would pay in debt service is $6,573,000. That's under the variable rate, and the variable rate for the purposes of this slide is estimated at 2%. The fixed rate refunding, again, if we did this today, it would be at 1.442. You can see the difference of the $6.5 million at a variable to the fixed rate would be $6,367,000, or a savings over the next 12 years of a little over $200,000. The reason that I'm bringing this to you is Water Master is part of the agreement. Water Master, in fact, does guarantee payment for some of these interest rates. So IUA and Water Master and the Bond Council and everyone else has been working on this since early April. This month is proposed to bring this item to the Water Master Board for approval. And then the week of June 8th, on June 10th, the Finance and Administration Committee meeting at IUA will be reviewing this. The IUA Board will be approving this item on June 17th. And then finally, the week of June 22nd, the price of the interim notes and the refunding bonds would get priced. And then finally, the entire transaction is expected to close the week of July 6th. So there's really no action in regards to this. I'm just bringing this to the pool's attention so that when this item is brought on the board's agenda, it would not be a surprise. And that concludes my report.
Do we have any questions for Joe? All right, hearing none, thank you.
Thank you
for your report. Now, if we can go back to business item A, if we can hear a presentation from the staff on that and do questions and answers, and then we'll go into closed session before we do a recommendation on that and the rest of the business items.
Very good, Mr. Chairman. Hope you can hear me well. We do have a presentation for you. It's I would characterize it as a lengthy presentation. The presentation is a fairly heavy emphasis on a little bit of background about Watermaster and why and how things come to be on the budget. I think that's really important for the pool members to understand and help make good decisions along the way. So we have that first, and then we have an opportunity. We're presenting each and every one of the categories in the budget and have an opportunity to ask questions as specific as anyone wants so that parties, again, can be well-informed. So with that, if I can please have the next slide. And by the way, this presentation today is open Q&A, so if anyone has a question, please unmute yourself, identify yourself, and the presenter will stop and try to address the question as best as possible. We are not asking for people to hold their questions to the end. We do ask that the questions are relevant to the subject that's being presented on. So with that, a reminder of the drivers that create expenses for the Watermaster budget, and of course everybody understands that there, in the beginning there was a judgment, which we now call the restated judgment. The judgment was supplemented by rules and regulations in 2001, the judgment itself creates certain obligations. Along the way, there were various agreements among the parties. For example, the peace agreement, the peace two agreement, the CEQA that went along with the peace two agreement that created other obligations. The peace agreement, as everybody knows, was an agreement to implement the OBMP implementation plan and its obligations and commitments that came with that. In 2004, there was a basin plan amendment that led to max benefit, and that came with its own commitments. And many of these activities and activities subsequent to the judgment have led to reports being filed with the court and subsequently ordered by the court. And, of course, we operate in the state of California, so there are various issues and permits and other legislated obligations that come to the basin that are being handled by Watermaster and thus create an expense. I can have the next slide, please. So for just a little bit more explanation of each of these items, the restated judgment rules and regulations require Watermaster staff and consultants to do things related to production and storage accounting. Things like what we're processing now, safe yield recalculation, which impose expenses, MPI analysis for various applications, conduct replenishment, and the overall administration. The peace agreement and the associated OBMP implementation plan from the year 2000 spelled out monitoring to be done, various analyses, for example, balance of recharge and discharge, computation of losses. It created reporting requirements and update, not only update to the OBMP, but update to recharge master plan and activities like that. The basin plan amendment, the regional board amended the basin plan of the Chino Basin, and the commitments that came with it in order to get the max benefit include hydraulic control monitoring. There was a commitment to achieve hydraulic control and a commitment to perform monitoring to demonstrate that, water quality monitoring and reporting. As parties moved on to agree to the full expansion of the CDA to 40,000 acre feet a year and did a subsequent environmental impact report on that, commitments like the Prado Basin monitoring, and you heard Andy's report on that, that's where that obligation comes from. There was additional monitoring for subsidence and a recommitment to evaluate the recharge master plan on a five-year basis. And finally, there are various reports approved and ordered by the court. And next, various permits. Again, the diversion permits, the SB 88 that Andy just reported on, those are things that become an activity and thus an expense on the Water Master budget as a result of that. Next slide, please. Beyond those, the Recharge Master Plan came up with a number of recharge improvement projects. And so we had the projects that were considered to be the CBFIP, the Chino Basin Facilities Improvement Program, in the 2000s. That is what caused the debt that is now the debt service element of our budget that Joe just mentioned as being refinanced. And in the 2013 update of the 2010 RMPU, the parties identified and agreed to implement a number of projects. Those are ongoing right now. So those incur additional expenses. As you probably know from reviewing our budget, there's no pay-go obligation, so there's no element of our budget this year that's collecting money on that to build those projects, same as the year before. The IUA has been successful in securing grants for these, and what was not secured for grants, it was secured by very low-interest state revolving fund loans, which will, 5 years after the completion of a project, will become an additional debt service obligation down the road. But in the meantime, the parties have the ability to build the projects and enjoy the benefits of the projects. Additional commitments that are in our budget is to share the recharge operations and maintenance expenses associated with IUA maintaining recharge facilities throughout Chino Basin, and that is an additional element of the budget. We'll discuss that a little bit more, and I've already mentioned the CBFIP as a prior list of projects that were completed and have now translated onto our budget as debt. Next slide, please. So I am hopeful that I'm able to convey the message that what comes onto our budget is sort of in two categories. There are things that have to be done because they're ordered and that are prior commitments. And there are things that parties want to do because it's in their best interest. Edgar, may I please ask you to mute your line? Thank you. So I thought it would be helpful if we present to the pool committees the exact same presentation that we presented to the board in February. Because the OBMP, because of the passage of time and the turnover of personnel, is something that is really worth refreshing and having fresh in everybody's mind, as it does bear a direct impact on to why we budget the things that we budget today. And so I'm going to hand off to Edgar to give you the same presentation that was given to the board. Again, please feel free to interrupt, ask any questions you may have. And with that, Edgar, please go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Sorry for the noise intrusion. I was just opening my line to get ready for this. Good morning, everyone. This brief presentation that I'm going to give to you today was already presented to the Water Master Board at their request in February. And it's just an outline of some of the benefits and the investments that have been done for the OVMP in the past 20 years. I'm going to go over the reasons why it was created and the status of the implementation of the program elements. So let's start with the reason why the OVMP was created. Paragraph 41 of the restated judgment says that Watermaster, with the advice of advisory and pool committees, has discretionary powers to develop a optimum basin management program that has both water quantity and quality considerations. Back in 1998, the basin was in turmoil. So the Judge Gunn, confronted with new challenges and new opportunities, ordered Watermaster to complete the development of an OBMB by June 30th in 2000. Next, please. Among all the program elements that were included in the implementation plan, I'm going to talk about the status of four of these program elements. And we're going to start with recharge, then move to land subsidence, talk about maximum benefit and related to maximum benefit, of course, the desalter program. And then I'm going to jump into the investment and benefits that we discussed earlier. Next, please. So this first slide is the trend of water recharge in the basin, all local water recharge, meaning storm water and recycled water. And as you can see, it has been trending upwards since 2005, and this is because of the improvements to the recharge facilities within the basin and also the achievement of the max benefit by the regional board, or the grant, the changes in the objectives by the regional board that allows the basin to recharge recycled water into the groundwater basin. So one of the largest benefits that the OBMP has had for the parties and the investments that have paid off is this improvement in the recharge capacity and also the attainment of hydraulic control that allowed us to recharge recycled water. Next, please. So this is just a selection of some of the projects that are already on the way, or some of them have been already completed. I'm only showing the 2013 RMPU projects. There were also some other projects before the 2013 RMPU. And again, this is a set of projects that have improved and increased the recharge capacity in the basin. Next, please. One of the stories of success of the collaboration of the Chino Basin parties has been the financing of the RMPU projects. This is a slide that I borrowed from IUA. And you can see in this slide that 99% of the expenses associated with these RMPU projects have been financed with either grants from the state or the federal government, or low-interest loans that will be paid 5 years after projects are completed. Only 1% are immediate out-of-pocket expenses for the parties, which allows the Chino Basin stakeholders to accrue the benefits of these improvements before they have to start paying for them. Next, please. Another story of success in the Chino Basin, and that is attributable to the implementation of the OBMP, is land subsidence management. So in the early 90s, there were land fisheries in the city of Chino, and that led to the development of a subsidence management plan that was also ordered by the court in 2007 and an update in 2015. Since the adoption of this subsidence management plan, subsidence rate in MC1, which we call the managed area, has slowed down considerably, and as I'm going to show you in the next map, has been practically arrested. The monitoring program that we implemented as part of the subsidence management plan has shown residual land movement in Northwest MC1 and the Northeast area in Management Zone 2, in the central part of Management Zone 2. So, in the next map, please, next please. As you can tell in this map, in the past 5 years, the ground motion has been practically non-existent except for the parts that I already mentioned in the Northwest MC1 area, which we are already also as part of the implementation of the OBMP, monitoring with the new Pomona extensometer that was installed last year. And the data gathering from that extensometer.
We need to go into the special board meeting. Ken.
Sorry.
Can we ask you to please mute your line, caller 10?
Thank you.
Thank you,
Anna. So as you can tell, in the Northwest MC1 area, there's still some ground motion, and that is already being studied for the development of the subsidence management plan for that area specifically. Next, please. Now I'm going to talk about the maximum benefit and the soil nutrient management plan. So going again back to 1998, the regional board was starting to update the soil and nutrient management plan for the Chino Basin. And what they found was that with the 1973 conditions and the old paradigm for management soil and nutrients in the basin, there was no assimilative capacity in the Chino Basin for TDS and nitrate. Next, please. So within the old paradigm to develop salt and nitrate objectives, the Chino Basin has 5 management zones. As you can tell, they resemble the management zones that we have now in the basin, but for the objectives of the regional board, there were these 3 management zones in the north, and then we have the Chino East and the Chino South. These groundwater quality objectives did not allow the parties to recharge water, imported water, without an offset. And of course, they didn't allow the use of recycled water, direct use of recycled water, of the recharge of recycled water. Next, please. So under the traditional approach, with these 3 management zones and the anti-degradation objectives of 1973, if parties wanted to import water for recharge in the basin, they would have to mitigate for it. There will also be a requirement of mitigation for recycled water reuse, and those mitigation would have to be on a one-for-one basis in each of these groundwater management zones. Next, please. Confronted with this, Water Master stakeholders and IUA proposed a new type of reg- some benefit. This new paradigm in regulation would require the Chino Basin parties to expand the desalting capacity in the Chino Basin, also expand the recharge capacity, and the attainment of hydraulic control. In turn, they will get higher TDS and nitrate objectives that would allow them to recharge imported water and the reuse of recycled water without extra mitigation. So, in the next map, those were the old objectives, TDS and nitrate objectives, and in the next, you're going to see the proposed objectives. You can see that the three management zones in the north have been combined into one management zone with a higher TDS and nitrate objective. And in the next slide, you will see what the parties have achieved due to this maximum benefit update. Since 2004, when the Basin Plan Amendment was adopted, the direct use of recycled water has accounted for almost a quarter of a million acre feet. There has been more than 100,000 acre feet of water, of recycled water recharged in the basin. And the parties have been able to import water or recharge without mitigation for about 168,000 acre feet. That's a total of more than half a million acre feet that the parties have been able to bring into the basin and put into the groundwater basin without any extra mitigation other than the commitment that the regional board outlined for the parties. Next, please. Some of those commitments was the expansion of the desalting capacity in the basin. So the Peace 2 agreement establishes the expansion of the desalting capacity in the basin. This, the CDA was created for this objective, and a series of wells were placed in the southern part of the basin to replace the declining agricultural groundwater pumping in the southern part with groundwater pumping that will eventually be treated and serve to municipal users in the area. Next, please. So this is the annual pumping of the CDA for the past 18 years. Can you click, please, Janine? The Peace 2 expansion provides for CDA capacity, pumping capacity of 40,000 acre feet a year. Click, please. And since 2007, because of this replacement of the agricultural pumping that has been lost in the southern part of the basin, the CDA has bring into the basin almost 15,000 acre feet of net recharge. Next, please. With the max benefit, the Chino Basin parties also unlocked the use of recycled water for direct use and also for water recharge. So, cumulatively, since 2004, the recycled water deliveries have accounted for 340,000 acre feet. They grew from 3,400 acre feet in 2000 to almost tenfold, 34,000 acre feet a year in 2017. The use of recycled water, that is recycled water provided by IUA, has replaced pumping, groundwater pumping, and also imported water that otherwise would have had to be purchased for use in the basin. Recycled water, of course, is some of the most reliable water that can be found. And using it in lieu of imported water has improved the sustainability and the reliability of the Chino Basin water supply. Next, please. Since the adoption in 2004 of this max benefit paradigm, you can see the use of recycled water within the basin has grown significantly, both for direct use and for recycled water recharge. Next, please. So that was the status of the implementation of some of the program elements in the OBMP, and I have shown you the story of success of the Chino Basin parties in implementing and accruing the benefits of this implementation of these programs. Now, one of the most interesting exercises that we went through when this request came was to look at what were the monetary benefits compared to the investments in the OBMP implementation. So for this part, we had some assumptions. The value of every acre feet of water that we will present to you in here has been valued as the Metropolitan Water District's Tier 1 untreated rate for every of the respective years that we present. The investments for the OBMP are calculated as the investment to build the CDA, the desalter replenishment obligation that came with the increase of desalting pumping, and all the OBMP assessments since 2000, which account for about $92 million since 2000. Next, please. So first, I want to show you the comparative of the Chino Basin water versus the first alternative, which is Metropolitan's Tier 1 rate. And in yellow, you can see the Chino Basin assessment since 2000. In green, it's out of the legend, but in green is the Chino Basin assessment plus a calculated production cost adjusted for inflation since 2000. And in blue, you have the first alternative to the Chino Basin water, which is imported water, and that's the Tier 1 rate. All of these are, of course, untreated. Next, please. So now that we have seen that the first alternative for all the years since 2000 is still more expensive than the Chino Basin water, we want to also look at how the investments have paid off for the party. So click, please. Here in the first column, for about $300 million was the CDA investment. That's how much it cost to build the CDA. Of course, these costs were offset by some grants. Click, please. That accounted for almost half of the cost of building the CDA. Click, please. So you can see the grants in the light blue. Click, please. The extra pumping or the increased pumping by the CDA came with the desalter replenishment obligation that had to be repaid by the parties. And this investment has also been offset by the reoperation water. So click, please. Shown in light blue. And as I mentioned, we're also accounting for all the OBMP assessments that have been assessed to the parties since 2000. Click, please. And that's about $100 million. So if we sum the dark blue parts of this chart, click, please. You're going to see that the total investment for the implementation of the OBMP has been about $300 million. Now let's look at the counterpart, which is the benefits. Since the achievement of hydraulic control, the storage losses have been reduced, and therefore the avoided storage losses are accounted in these parts liquids. Also, because of the achievement of hydraulic control, parties were able to get reoperation water that was used to serve their customers so quickly. So this is the value of that reoperation water. And because of the implementation of the OBNP and the achievement of hydraulic control, parties have also been able to recharge recycled water. And if we sum up all these green parts, we're going to look at the total benefits accrued by the parties due to the OBNP implementation. So three clicks, please, which is about $500 million. Next, please. Click. So this is the comparison of the investments and the benefits of the implementation of the OBNP programs. It's about $198 million difference. So with that $300 million investment, parties have been able to accrue $500 million in benefits, and the net benefit of that implementation has been about $200 million. Next, please, or click, please. Some benefits that are not accounted in these $500 million, but are also very valuable for the management of the basin, are the ability to transfer water between parties. That has happened cumulatively since the implementation of the OBNP, almost 800,000 acre feet. The cumulative water produced by the CDA and SERP to municipal users is almost 500,000 acre feet. The cumulative water recharge through DYY, which is storage and recovery program in the basin, has brought water, high quality water, for almost another 500,000 acre feet cumulatively. In the benefits, there's also the avoided conflict due to water quality, particularly with agencies downstream. Avoided conflict due to land subsidence. Improved resilience to drought. And the subsidence management and improved water quality in MC1 that has also real monetary value, but was not included in this calculation. So, next, please. This graph shows the mix of the water supplies used in the Chino Basin. And as you can tell, groundwater production accounts for most of how the Chino Basin parties satisfy the water demands, followed by imported water, and lastly by recycled water, for direct use of recycled water. So parties rely heavily in the Chino Basin to satisfy the water demands for their customers. And this is important because the Chino Basin Optimum Basin Management Program has allowed the parties to rely on their basin to satisfy these demands. So next, please. This is because Chino Basin water has been available to parties 100% of the time from 2000 to 2019, whereas imported water, as you can tell by the state water project allocation in this graph, has been very variable over the years due to drought, due to different conditions. And that is reflected on how much of the water used in the basin is groundwater, which is, for all these years, about 60%. So the implementation of the OBMP, which is one of the drivers for the budget, has allowed parties to rely heavily on groundwater use to satisfy the demands for their customers, and has accrued many, many benefits to the parties that, of course, come with their respective investments. But overall, the balance is still very positive. So with that, I will answer any questions that anyone may have.
Thank you, Edgar. May I please have the next slide? So I appreciate everyone's patience. We felt that the story, the success story of the OBMP, which is really the party's success story, is an important backdrop to the budget that we prepare each and every year. You can hear the themes in this presentation about the OBMP. There is monitoring that's involved. That translates into part of our annual budget. There is hydraulic control and associated monitoring and reporting that comes with that. There is operation and maintenance of recharge basins in order to capture and recharge recycled water and surface water. Product basin monitoring, all kinds of reporting that comes above and beyond that, along with the projects. So we hope that in exchange for your patience with this high-level overview, you gain an appreciation for the budget components, and we're going to dive into those next. What you see on this slide is a personal tracker sheet that I have, and I happen to be sharing that with Justin Scott Coe, who said, hey, this is great. Maybe we should share it with everybody else. And so here it is. This is a chart of commitments, and it's my job to make sure that Water Master's commitments are met. And so I use this chart to keep track of the commitments the Water Master has. In these, all of these come from either the judgment or the OBMP, or their state water board requirements through permitting, DWR requirements through legislation like CASJA, regional water quality control board requirements, for example, max benefit, fish and wildlife with their regulatory authority, or regional water quality, or excuse me, the our water master board. So there's a presentation of those things along with their frequency, and that's why you can see that our budget sometimes may have one thing in it, other times it doesn't. For example, preparation of the ambient water quality report comes up every 3 years, so it may be an item that that you don't necessarily see every year, safe yield recalculation, you don't see for a while, and then it pops up again. So that is kind of a composite view of commitments. This isn't everything that Water Master does, but these are commitments and their origin. So with that, I'd like to invite Joe to go ahead and present the numbers of the labor budget. Now, as we're getting the next slide, Joe, can you please, I think everyone's familiar with the budget development, so present but don't dwell on the entire process of the budget development, and take it away. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Again, good morning, members of the appropriate pool. Janine, if I could have you click about 10 different times, please. Thank you. Everyone's seen this slide before, the budget development. These are basically the components that help build the budget. You can see that there are many different avenues where the budget development comes from. Personnel committee, the three pool chairs have input into the budget. The groundwater coordinating committee, GLMC, Prado Basin, RIPCOM. We did provide a budget release on March 24th. We did have an ongoing Q&A process. All of those questions that were issued to us were on the FTP site. We then held a budget workshop on April 21st, and then finally a budget workshop on April 28th. So you can see that when we develop the Water Master budget, it comes from many different areas. Next, please. This is how the budgeting process works, and you'll see on the far left-hand side, those are items that we call classifications, and then the middle category, you'll see those are budget items that we call categories. So, Janine, several clicks, please. You'll notice that labor and burden can be allocated into the three different areas of administrative, OBMP expenses, and OBMP project elements. Legal services can be shown under administrative or OBMP expenses. The engineering services are shown under OBMP expenses and the program elements for OBMP. And then all other expenses show within the three categories of admin, OBMP, and the OBMP project program elements. Then finally, we have debt service. Debt service is categorized under the service, and that is invoiced under operating safe yield. So you can see you have five different classifications that eventually roll into the three categories of budget expenses. Several clicks, please. Then you'll see, now that we've categorized our expenses into the categories, the admin expenses are allocated as a production-based for the assessment, administrative assessment. Next, please. The OBMP is allocated to the assessment invoice based on OBMP assessment. And one more click, please. And then the program elements also go towards the OBMP assessment. And then finally, several clicks, Janine. We have debt service, which is invoiced based on operating safe yield, and that goes under the debt service category. Next slide, please. This is the budget comparison. You'll see on the far left-hand column, the first three items are the budget categories of admin, OBMP, and then the program elements. And then the remaining items at the bottom, those are the classifications of labor and burden, legal, engineering services, debt service, recharge basin, O&M, and then all other expenses. You can see in the gray column there, the proposed budget, regardless of whether you look at it from a category perspective or a classification perspective, the budget proposed is $9,270,610. The next column, the amended budget for fiscal year 2019 was $9,180,956. Next slide, please. We did have two different versions. We had the March 24th version of the budget, which was $9,307,983. And you can see at the top, we had one adjustment. So we added $4,800 per the request of Mr. Brian Guy for the non-agricultural pool. And then we did have a reduction of $42,173. So taking that $9.3 million, adding in $4,800, subtracting out the $42,000, that brings us to the April 28th version of the budget, which is $9,270,000. Next slide, please. So we've talked about the categories versus the classifications. And Janine, one click, please. So in yellow, you'll see that this item of administrative, if you go across horizontally, you'll see that under the administrative category, the budget is $2,684,000, and that is comprised of labor, legal, and all other expenses. One click, please. Next, you'll see the OBMP category, which is $1,772,000. And again, you can see that that component is comprised of labor, legal, engineering services, and then all other expenses. One click, please. And finally, we have the OBMP Implementation Projects Program Elements 1 through 9, and that total budget is $4.8 million. And you can see the categories of labor and burden, engineering services, debt services, and all other expenses. One click, please. Those three categories total to $9.2 million. So now that's the category. That's the historical three categories of the Watermaster budget. So now let's look at it from the classification perspective. One click, please. So you can see labor and burden, $1,999,000. Legal services, $1,029,000. Engineering services, $2.9 million. Debt service, $534,000, and then all other expenses, $2.7 million, for a grand total, $9.2 million. So this chart clearly shows, regardless of whether you look at it from the categories perspective, the historical three items of the Watermaster budget, or the classifications, $9.2 million. So now, next slide, please. We're going to go through now and look at those different classifications. So we're now going to look at the labor budget, labor costs. Next, please. So you can see this is a chart that shows the approved budget for fiscal year 2019 of $1.940. The proposed budget for fiscal year 2020-2021 is $1.999, an increase of $58,000. Some of the assumptions for the labor budget. The Personnel Committee met on November 12th, 2019, and February 20th, 2020. That's our opportunity to meet with the Personnel Committee and review the current pay structures, benefit structures, and determine whether there's going to be any changes. For the Watermaster budget for this fiscal year, there are no new benefits being proposed. The current staffing is based on 10 full-time equivalents. And you can see by looking at the chart above that we're not increasing any full-time equivalents. We, for the last two or three years, have stayed relatively right at 10 full-time equivalents. For purposes of the health benefits, each year we purchase our benefits for medical through CalPERS, and each year there's always an increase of the premiums. This year, we're assuming a 10% increase, which would be effective as of January 1st, so that 10% is part of that burden increase of $40,000. For purposes of this year's budget, we're also not using a new salary matrix. We are using the current salary schedule from fiscal year 2019-2020, and we are not including a cost of living adjustment for this fiscal year's budget. We will be reevaluating the cost of living adjustment. We're looking to reevaluate that as July 1st. And then depending upon what happens with the state of the economy and COVID-19 and all the ramifications of what that brings into from a business perspective, we will, again, as I mentioned, we'll be relooking at that in July and then every quarter after that. Next slide, please. So this is the opportunity when we ask, are there any questions that anyone has in regards to the labor cost of $1.999 million? If not, let's go ahead and move to the next classification section. Actually, Joe, managing a few things at the same time. Let's skip ahead a couple of slides and do engineering services next. Okay, perfect. Engineering services. So if I could have Mr. Malone from Wildermuth Engineering. Next slide, sure, please.
Yes, next slide. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Andy.
Yeah, we showed the slide previously. These are the past, ongoing, and future major Watermaster initiatives that are going on. we show this because most of these major water master initiatives include engineering services. And so what we have here is the salt nutrient management plan update that has been going on. We are expecting to be complete with that by 2020, with hopefully an update to IUA's permit and the basin plan. The state of the basin report is done once every 2 years. It was not performed last year. It's planned for this year. The safe yield reset, most of the technical work has been completed, and we're zeroing in on that final report. And so as far as engineering services go for safe yield reset, it's some effort that has been included in the budget to support the implementation of the safe yield reset with the court. The OBMP update reports were completed last fiscal year. And so we have some engineering support on the development of the implementation agreements. And the plan there, the way the budget's laid out this year, is that the plan is to have those agreements finalized by the end of the calendar year. And then the assumption is that OBMP implementation would ensue then for the second half of the fiscal year beginning in January. Those are the assumptions that are in the report. I mean in the proposed budget. Next slide, please. And then this is a high level summary of the engineering services budget by category. In some categories, the costs went down compared to last year. So the three columns you're seeing are this year's proposed budget in the first column, last year's budget, and then the difference between. So for example, that first 6,900 line item, the reason why that came down is because that's the line item that included the OBMP update efforts and the safe yield recalculation efforts. So that came down significantly. So overall, it's a $75,000 budget increase from this year to the proposed net budget. And that's the high level summary there. We've given you some detailed presentations at the budget workshops, and of course the documentation that goes along with that breaks all of this down into individual line items for each one of these major categories. I'm happy to take any specific questions you might have on engineering services at this time.
Thank you, Andy. If I could just remind everyone, on the Water Master's FTP site, we do have a folder. It's labeled Fiscal Year 2020-21 Proposed Budget. And then if you were to open those files up, you'll see that all of the documents for the budget release, workshop number one, workshop number two, today's meeting, pool meetings, if you were to open that up, you would find the engineering services budget tables 1 through 4. That is item number 4. And then the 56-page narrative is item number 5. So there again, if you wanted to look, as Andy had mentioned, all of the information in regards to the engineering budget is on the FTP site. Also, for all of the other categories, for example, if you wanted to look at the pay schedules, that is item number 2. We're going to be discussing shortly the legal services budget. That's on number 3. So all of the documentation it lists out all of the data and details for the budget is available on the FTP site. Peter, would you like Charles to move? Yes, sir.
Just wanted to make a comment in terms of the budget development process and the opportunity for comment and input by the parties. As you mentioned, we've had the presentations to the parties through the workshops. We had the budget release in late March and workshops in April the 21st and the 28th. And of course, as has been our custom the last few years, we are open to receiving questions and posting responses on our FTP site. We did receive one comment letter, and we posted responses to that comment letter that is available on our FTP site for everybody to see. And noticed that one of the comments that was in the letter was also repeated at one of the workshops. So I wanted to share with the parties that we have reviewed the comment. The comment had to do with including work scope related to the updated OBMP implementation plan services, and specifically that we should not include the work that has not yet been approved by the parties. As we always do, we consider comments by any and all parties, and we encourage you to always feel free to express your comments, no matter if you're the only one sharing them or if there's others that share your comments as well. In this particular case, on this comment, we considered it and still recommend that the budget is approved by the advisory committee, including the proposed estimated work that Andy mentioned for the OBMP implementation work. And explained a little bit of our rationale is that our budget is an estimate based on anticipated work. In some cases, the work is clearly identifiable, and in other cases, the work can be reasonably foreseen. Creating a budget for scope that is both identifiable and reasonably foreseeable, it allows flexibility and nimbleness to respond to various needs as they come up. Otherwise, we'd have to amend the budget each time some new work to begin, and we find that not only to be cumbersome, but also increases administrative costs for you, for the parties. In this particular case, the scope of work pertains to work that will only be performed by Wildermuth in support of activities associated with an updated implementation plan. The cost is estimated on the assumption that the work would begin January 2021, as Andy mentioned. The scope has been included in the budget because the parties are working on developing an updated OBMP implementation plan, and it's reasonable to expect that the work will commence in the second half of the fiscal year. We believe the updated OBMP implementation plan is in the parties' interest, and so we do expect that it will go forward. In terms of how was the scope developed, the actual scope is unknown at the time because the parties will be driving this. The estimate that we proposed is based on the scope that was prepared and reviewed with the parties in the OBMP update scoping report last year. It's entirely possible that the actual scope will be modified pursuant to the final updated OBMP implementation plan when it's agreed to by the parties. The scope that was presented to the parties in the scoping report contemplates that the parties would be leading the work and Watermaster's engineer would offer support as necessary. And so that's a double assurance for those that are concerned that the budgeted funds cannot be spent unless the parties commence the work. And some thoughts on how to proceed with a budget, and this is why we land on recommending including it, is that if the scope is not included in the budget at this time and the parties are ready to proceed, we'd have to go through a budget transfer or a budget amendment through the advisory committee. That'll take at least a month, and it's extra wear and tear on everybody else. If it's an amendment, it may or not need an assessment, which is not pleasing, as we've heard at one of the workshops, not pleasing to a non-ag party. Also, the approval of the budget does not mean that the funds will be assessed. If the funds are included in the budget at this time and the parties are not ready to proceed by the end of October, then the funds can be excluded from the annual assessment and not be collected. And finally, approval of the budget does not mean that the funds will be forfeited, even if they are assessed. If the parties do not implement activities toward the updated OBMP implementation plan, the money remains unspent and is credited to the parties toward next fiscal year's expenses.
Peter?
There are no,
Hi, Peter. This is Katie Ginger, City of Ontario. Thank you for that presentation and for clearly laying out your thought process. It seems to me when you're describing these expenses as reasonably foreseeable, that seems to be assuming that the parties in their implementation plan will agree to implement certain activities. But we really haven't had those discussions yet.
Okay, I understand that. And are you saying that you will not be agreeing to an implementation plan?
No, I'm saying that I don't know the content of the implementation plan yet.
I think if I wasn't clear, let me try to be more clear. We're not pretending to know what the content of the implementation plan will be. All we're identifying is that there will likely be the need for some support. And so using an estimate that was based on some assumptions, which is just that, an estimate based on assumptions, which in my opinion is harmless in the sense that if it's not spent, it comes back to you. It creates flexibility in the process to move forward. It's not mandatory. This is a thing that we do not consider that has to be in the budget. We think it's something that you would want to, because it creates the opportunity for you to move quickly and more efficiently. If it's not included, as I just said, if it's not included, then when the time comes to move forward, we would have to process some budget transfer or a budget amendment.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I appreciate that. And I know from our perspective, we're perfectly comfortable processing a budget amendment or transfer once we have an implementation plan in place.
Understood. Thank you.
Peter, this is Ron Craig. Can I ask you, fast forward to October, and so how do you foresee us being able to, how would it be presented to us at the time of assessment for decision-making on what we actually assess or don't assess on which of the, on the items that were, let's say we move forward and we approve the budget, we have these prospective OBMP budget line items in there. But as you said, it isn't really assessed until October, and so there's another kind of a decision point there. What would be the circle back through the pool process for these items that are prospective in evaluation?
Thank you, Ron. Good question. So the circle through the pool committees and advisory committee is the process of approving the assessment package. As you know, the process is to collect data through the end of the production year, assemble that, do the calculations on everyone's use of their water right, and prepare an assessment package that then generates assessments that collect the approved budget. That, to me, is an opportunity for the parties to say, we don't want to assess the entire approved budget. There's an element of that. In this particular case, let's say it's that activity that we do not want to assess. That is something that is, I imagine, would be input that is provided by the pools, and we would revise the assessment package to collect the items that the pools want to have collected. Remember, the assessment itself is an advisory committee approval. So the pools have a say-so in that. I don't think Joe does either. I do not view the approval of the budget as a mandate for what is to be covered by the assessment package. That could change.
And Peter, I agree with your analysis.
Similarly, I mean, it works the other way as well. Let's say we get to October, and for some reason, the parties say, well, we need to add an additional $50,000. Well, then the assessment package reflects the additional whatever. It works both ways.
And also, if
we do, if I could just add to that, if we do get, let's just assume we get to the November time frame and we didn't assess for certain items and we got into January and February and it was decided that the amounts were needed, we at that time, and frankly any time after November, we could do a special assessment. It does take time and effort. However, a special assessment could be done. We have done those in the past. So, are there any other questions on the engineering budget? There is, as Andy mentioned, we do have a 56, or maybe it was Joe, we have a 56-page memo explaining each and everything, and every line item on the engineering budget. And, you know, we've had the workshops, we've had the ability for Q&A, then I'm assuming that, not hearing any further questions, that the parties don't have any further concerns about the engineering services budget. I mean, I get it, I understand the concern expressed by Katie on the on including the work to support the updated implementation plan that's registered. And I think I've shared with you in abundance my rationale for why I think it should be included. Entirely your decision, what you do. Are there any other specific issues with the engineering services budget? Very good. Then why don't we continue with what's next on the budget, Joe, on the presentation? The next is slide 48, which is the recharge debt service. Next slide, please. This is the recharge improvement debt payment. It is captured under account number 7690.1. These are the debt service payments, as was discussed during my CFO report. This payment is paid directly to IUA. We get this dollar amount from IUA each year. For this fiscal year, it is $534,496. This amount is calculated and forecasted at an interest rate of 2%. We pay this amount of $534,000 annually in July, so it's not multiple payments, it's one payment. And then just from a comparison perspective, the prior year's budget was $633,000. Next slide. Are there any questions in regards to the recharge debt service payments? If not, let's move. One thing I want to clarify on that is that I mentioned about IUA having been successful in financing things with state revolving fund loans and grants. And the state revolving fund loans, I wanted to clarify, they essentially allow the parties to defer what would be a pay-as-you-go expense into a debt service payment. That debt service payment becomes effective a year after the completion of the project. Effectively, that's a few years after the project begins by the time we go through the design, permitting, construction, and so on. For some of the projects, those are nearly done, but there's other projects that are kind of halfway through. I didn't want to mislead anyone in thinking that that's going to be decades away. That's going to be ramping up in the next 2 to 3 years. But again, some of the projects, for those that follow RIPCOMP closely, some of those projects are either done or getting done. If there are no questions about recharge debt service, I apologize for rearranging things a little bit. Let's go back to legal services and ask Brad to chime in.
That would be slide 41, please.
Thanks, Peter. Just wanted to give a brief introduction. The legal budget is compiled by estimating those topics and items that we think we'll be asked to spend time on during the next fiscal year. And this process is really a combination of relying on our experience in prior years, working with staff, to predict what our next year's activities might be. Invariably, the mix is not exactly what we predict because things come up and our priorities are moved around for us. The actual expenses that the parties see are based on the number of hours that we actually spend working on things, not on what is budgeted. And when we compile the budgets, Watermaster, because of its long relationship with the firm, receives a significant discount, and we're not proposing any rate increases at this time. We've compiled a memo, five-page memo, with detail on why we think we'll be spending time on all of these different things during the next fiscal year and what the estimated level of effort is. And just in regard to what's different from the current year and what we think we'll be doing in the next year, a couple different things I wanted to highlight that are kind of bigger efforts. One is that we're not envisioning any assessment package revisions in the next year like we did at the beginning of this year. We did budget time in response to the party's request for a rules and regulations rewrite. And then in that OBMP category, the mix of things has changed given what we think we'll be spending time on. For instance, time in reviewing recovery applications and additional time on the OBMP update, and probably the safe yield if things slip into the next fiscal year because of what's happened at the end of the current fiscal year and how things we thought we were going to spend time on have moved into next fiscal year. That's just a high-level summary. As I said, we have that five-page memo that has lots of detail on the specific line items, and I'm happy to take any questions if you have them.
Hi, this is Katie again, City of Ontario. I just wanted to make a comment. Peter and Brad, thank you for being responsive to our request related to the rules and regulations. I appreciate that. I appreciate you showing that you were listening to that. I did want to say, though, in light of everything that we have on our plate this year and the pandemic and economic uncertainty, I think it may be best to defer that effort, and I wanted to be the one to say that because I know that we really championed the request to do that, but I'm not sure that this year is the right time.
Katie, this is Peter. If the pool does not want the effort to go forward at this time, we'll be happy to remove it from the budget.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you. Are there any other questions in regards to the legal services budget? If not, Janine, let's go ahead and move back up to slide 51, please. So the next category is recharge improvement projects, and you can see from this slide there is no budget being proposed for fiscal year 2020-2021. We have not had a budget that was actually input into the system. The last time that we did a budget and assessment for recharge improvement projects was in fiscal year 2016-2017. And just as a footnote, we did budget $2.8 million in fiscal year 17-18, but we did not assess. So here, again, is a perfect example of how, yes, it may have been in the budget, but for fiscal year 17-18, we did not assess that $2.8 million. Next slide, please. Are there
Hearing no questions, let's move next to the recharge O&M. Next slide, please. Several clicks, please, Jeannie. Thank you. The groundwater recharge cost-sharing O&M is captured under account number 7206. And you'll see that the proposed budget, the Water Master portion is $1.448 million. The IOE portion is $420,000 for a total O&M cost of $1.8 million. For purposes of the budget, Water Master's portion is the only amount that is within our budget. Again, it's captured under account 7206. There are no adjustments for previous year credits, and this item is paid on a quarterly basis. So IOA each quarter takes that $1.4 million, divides by four, and we do get an invoice. This category, very similar to the debt service, we pay based on a budget. The debt service and the recharge O&M are trued up each year, and any amounts that we overpaid were refunded back from IUA. And on your assessment invoice, you would get that money back. And that money is refunded back to the appropriate pool based on how they originally paid. So for this purposes, I believe this is paid on operating safe yield. So if there was a dollar amount coming back, it would be allocated back on your invoice, similar to the same methodology as it was originally paid. Next item, please. One click, please. This again just simply shows the total budget, $1.8 million, Water Master's portion, $1.4 million, IUA's portion, $420,000. Next slide, please. Are there any questions in regards to the recharge O&M? Next slide, please. Let's talk just briefly about the estimated assessment. Next slide, please. This is our historical production chart. You'll notice that on the top in black there, that's the total production over years from the first year, 76, 77, through 1920 projected. The second line in the middle there, in the blue line, that's the appropriate pool production. Looking farther down, you'll see the overlying agricultural pool production in green. And then finally, at the very bottom in the brown line, that's the overlying non-agricultural pool production. So this basically is just a historical graph showing production and the Water Master budget. Next slide, please. This chart does a couple of different things. The first thing that it does is, if you look at the far left-hand column, you'll see that's the amended fiscal year 1920 budget of $9.1 million. You'll then next, in the column highlighted by green, that's the fiscal year 2020 proposed budget of $9.2 million. You'll see it difference between the two, $89,000. This chart also helps bring to reality what the estimated assessment would be, assuming a production rate. There are certain categories within the budget that are not based on production, so we have to exclude those when we try to do the calculation. So, for example, you'll notice debt service there, $534,000. That is excluded from the budget. You still pay for it on the invoice, but for purposes of getting down to what the production-based assessment is, we need to exclude that. Similar, the appropriate pool legal services budget of $130,000 and the non-agricultural pool services budget of $75,000, those are paid specifically by the pools based on the formulas provided by the pools, so we exclude those. And then finally, there's two categories that are interest-related. The first is interest income of $130,000. That's what we estimate that we're going to receive from the funds that we have invested in LAIF. And then finally, we have the DYY storage program. We bill MWD each year, $176,000. each year. It is escalated by a CPI of about 2.5%. So last year, you can see it was 171,000. This year, it's 176,000. If we did not have interest income or the groundwater storage program, those dollars, the dollar would be much higher. So by having interest and billing MWD, that helps the overall assessment be lower. So you can see adding all of those together, that's just a little over $1 million. So if you take the 9.2 minus the $1 million, you'll see 8.224 million. They're highlighted with the yellow category. That is what the production-based assessment dollar amount is. So then the next category, we estimated or have estimated that the production for this year is going to be 118,846, and that is based off of the first two actual quarters, and then looking and projecting where we think the production would be for the next two. So we've estimated production again to be 118,000. And then finally, if you just simply divide the assessment based 8.2 by 118,000, you'll see that the admin expense assessment is $20.12. The OBMP and implementation projects is $49.08. For a total of $69.20. And then you can see the comparison, the difference between what was actually paid and what we're estimating to pay. This is not what the November invoices will be. This is just assuming with an estimated production of 118,000. Next slide, please. So just briefly, let's just look at the production. Again, as I had mentioned, production 118,000 compared to actual production of 100,000. So it's a variance of about 17, almost 18%, or 18,000 acre feet. Production is based on the first two quarters of actual production. And finally, if the production happens to go down, then inversely, the assessment price will go up. And if production goes up, then the assessment dollars will go down. Next slide, please. This is what we call the money page. This is always attached with the assessment package. And what this does, this has a lot of information on it, and I've highlighted the three categories that are most important. You'll see the first category, one click please. 118,000, that's where the, as just mentioned on the slide before, the 118,000 is where what we're projecting the 1920 production to be. Next slide, or next click please. Then you'll see, as we discussed, we have the budget less all of the different offsets. So there's where we come back with the production-based assessment of 8.2 million. And then finally, when you do the division between the two, one click please, you come up with $92.20. Now, Peter and I've discussed this earlier, where we envision,
poor Joe.
Yes.
It's not $92.
$69.20, sorry.
Better.
My screen is a little bit smaller, so. One of the things that Peter and I have discussed is, for example, if there was to be some adjustment of the budget versus what gets assessed, you would be able to come up on this slide or this worksheet, and we would insert a row where you can see the total budget. So you could have the total budget still, the dollar amount, but we would show that line being reduced, and this is where you would be able to see any reduction from the budget. And then obviously that would flow through to whatever the dollar amount was for the $69.20. Next slide, please. This is just simply, again, if you look at the far right-hand column, $69.20 versus the actual was paid $74.99, or a variance of $5.79. Again, this is just what it could be, assuming a production of 118,000. Next slide, please. Are there any questions in regards to the estimated assessment? Next slide, please. Let's just walk through the approval process very quickly today. We're going to be obviously showing you the budget today. We'll be showing the agricultural pool, the budget later this afternoon. Tomorrow we'll be showing this budget to the non-agricultural pool. On May 21st, a budget will be presented for approval by the advisory committee. And then finally, a budget will be presented to the Watermaster Board for adoption on May 28th. Next slide, please. And then finally, any questions and or comments in regards to the proposed fiscal year 2020-2021 budget?
All right, thank you, Joe. If we don't hear any further comments tonight, then we're going to go ahead and go into closed session.
And then as a reminder, please, everybody that goes into closed session, please disconnect from the GoToMeeting so we don't hear what's going on in your confidential session. And then log back in. You can call in or log in through the website on this GoToMeeting. It'll be waiting for you.
Yes, and I believe those on the pool, you should have the call-in and the GoToMeeting numbers to get into. And then we will email Anna when we're out, Peter.
Perfect. And then Anna, in return, will email the universe, what we call the Watermaster universe, so that everybody knows the open session is beginning again.
Perfect. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we'll go ahead and log into the other numbers. So when you're ready, please log in. We'll probably start in 5 to 10 minutes. All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to get organized. Things have been going quickly. I can't believe it's only 11 o'clock. Oh, no, it's 1 o'clock. All right. Our camera's not on, right? You can't see me scrambling for all the paperwork. No, thank you, Anna. I don't know. Do we have everybody back?
Yeah,
it looks like everybody's back. Okay, let's go ahead and come out of closed session for the appropriate pool. We do have reportable items. So you ready? In closed session, we did approve a special assessment for AP Legal for $70,000. That was a motion by Chris Diggs of Pomona, and Chris Birch, seconded by Chris Birch of Harupa. And that's for $70,000 to add to the AP budget for AP Legal. We did have a recommendation for the budget item that was presented for the pool. That was business item A. And Anna, we sent you an email on that. The motion is pretty long, and we do have a letter attached to it as well. I can go ahead and read the motion.
Yes, please do.
The appropriative pool approves the fiscal year 2020-2021 budget as presented, with the removal of all efforts and expenditures related to the OBMP update, which have not yet been agreed to by the parties. The pool requests that Watermaster bring those items back for budget amendment, if necessary, once an implementation plan and implementing agreement is signed by all parties. It was a motion by Katie, Ontario, and seconded by SACO. It was opposed by Harupa, and all others in attendance approved.
And there's also items.
And there's also other detailed items, and those have been outlined in the letter email to you.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We also have another action item, but it's on business item the safe, no, not E, I'm sorry. Which one? Oh, this B, the storage management plan. So we can do that after that item is presented, if that works.
Yes, that's perfect.
Okay, so then we are at business item B. I don't know if that's a presentation by staff or...
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a presentation on that item. We presented on that last month. The pool voted on it. This item came back this month because the agricultural pool asked for it to be brought back this month. We put it on your agenda in case the pool committee wanted to discuss or take any further action.
Okay, thank you. We did take further action. We have a resolution that we're going to email to Anna as well. And this was, this was a motion by Ron Craig of Chino Hills and a second by Josh Swift of Montana Union with a no vote by Monte Vista Water District, Monte Vista Irrigation, and the City of Ontario. The rest approved the resolution, and we'll be sending that resolution to Anna. It is quite long, but it's basically... in support of the storage management plan. Correct. Okay, so that's it for item B then.
Mr. Chairman, to the extent possible, if we can see that resolution, I know our next meeting that starts at 1:30, the agricultural pool will be interested in seeing as much from that as possible. So we'd appreciate it if you could send it to us.
Yeah, I see it up on the screen, and I think Eduardo's hitting the send button as we talk. Are you ready to go with it?
Yeah.
Take out the highlights.
Oh, crap.
Okay, it'll be sent to you momentarily. So the next item is...
Next item, Mr. Chairman, is an amendment to task order number 2 in the master agreement with IUA that we have. And this was an amendment to continue the support of the effort to oversee the Upper Santa Ana River groundwater integrated model efforts and provide technical support to IUA and to Watermaster in that regional effort.
Okay. Do I have any questions or comments from the poll?
Hi, this is Courtney Jones, the City of Ontario. We sent out an email to those who signed the MOU with IUA. Our understanding is that IUA will be making a no-go decision sometime this summer, as early as June. And for this reason, we do not believe that this work is necessary to reach a no-go decision.
Hi, this is Edgar from Watermaster. Courtney, I think you are talking about task order number 4. There's no MOU between the parties and IUA for the integrated model, I believe.
I apologize. Yes, I am. I got a little ahead of myself.
So any other comments on item C? Cool. Do I have a motion? Hey, Peter, I'm not sure.
This is Dave Crosley. I'll make a motion to approve business item 2C.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Do I have a second?
A second.
Is that Chris Diggs?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Chris Diggs from Pomona, a second. Anyone opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, let's move on to item D, and that's the first amendment to task order number 4 under the master's agreement for collaborative projects of the Chino Basin project support.
It looks like Chris Birch wanted to say something, but his audio is not working. He has a message on the site. Sorry.
Okay, Peter, do we have a presentation on item D?
Edgar can give you a very brief overview on that. Edgar, would you please?
Thank you, Peter. Item D is a continuation of a task order that was approved in 2018. And this is to allow IUA to continue the contracting of Wilderness Environmental Services for analyzing different scenarios for the Chino Basin project. There was a change order that IUA received on the work that Wilderness Environmental has been performing, and this task order will allow IUA to approve that change order.
Okay, thank you. So this is 100% paid for by IUA?
Correct. This is a task order that is 100% IUA. There's no financial impact or work that Watermaster is involved.
Okay, thank you. Do I have any comments from the poll? Courtney?
This is Courtney from Ontario. Just to reiterate my comments on the right business item. So we're looking at reaching a go-no-go with IUA in the next month or so with the Chino Basin program. And we don't believe that this work is necessary to reach that go-no-go decision.
Okay, thank you.
This is Peter. If I can offer some perspective on this, the work is work that Wildermuth will be performing to assist IUA as it's moving forward with the Chino Basin program. If discussions between IUA and its member agencies lead to the conclusion that the work needs to stop, I'm certain that the work would stop. The reason for the task order and the work being done this way is to offer some administrative efficiency and lower expense. If IUA doesn't have the work done by Wildermuth through this task order, they could very easily contract directly with Wildermuth. It just becomes one more administrative thing for them to manage. So you might, in your consideration of this item, you might find it helpful to separate the administrative vehicle from the work itself that IUA is doing. Thank you.
And Peter, if I can add, I did talk to IUA on this item this morning, and it is going to their board next week. So their board has not approved this yet. So if their board does not approve it, then what Peter said, they would, of course, not do the work. Any other comments from the pool?
This is Katie, Ontario. I would just say, we are a dual member. Obviously, we're an appropriate pool member. We're also a member of IUA. And I understand that there is no fiscal impact to the Watermaster budget or side of things from this item. It is fully funded by IUA. However, I think we've been pretty clear in our communication with IUA and with the others that that this work isn't it's going out of order because it's evaluating alternatives that we haven't decided to embark on, and we have a step before that we need to reach, and so we feel like it would be inconsistent for us to approve this, even if it is just an administrative vehicle, when it's going against the conversations that we're having on the side. So we're not looking to approve this today.
Any other full comment? Oh, go ahead, Peter.
Once again, whether this is approved or not, it doesn't change what IUA does. What IUA does will be impacted by IUA, its board, and its communication with its member agencies. I offer that for your thoughts.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Any other pool members want to speak on this item?
This is Monta Vista. We'll offer a motion to recommend that the advisory committee not approve or not recommend to the board approval of this First Amendment to the task order.
Okay, not recommend.
Ontario will second.
Okay. We do have a motion on the table and a second. Do I hear anybody opposed to this motion? Okay, so by not being opposed to it, then we are supporting the recommendation to not move this or not approve this at the advisory committee. I want to make sure everybody understands that.
The city of Pomona, because it doesn't affect, we're not an IUA service area, I'm going to abstain from this one.
Anybody else?
Chris Birch is having difficulty with his audio, but he is in the chat function, and he also wants to abstain. Is that allowed without his voice?
I think we can make, allowances for that. I know he's trying to talk, and he can't. Okay.
Star 6 is the code in case he's on the phone.
Anybody else? All right, hearing none, then that motion passes. All right, let's move on to item E, the safe field recalculation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the pool, we are bringing this item to you again for any advice and assistance you may have for the board. We have a short presentation on this, it's the pool's prerogative to receive or decline the presentation. It is a summation of the common themes of questions and comments we've received and the process moving forward.
No, thank you, Peter. I think we will decline that today. We did talk about this item as well in closed session, and we are very close to giving advice to Watermaster on this. We would like to provide you with that in a letter before your meeting on the 22nd, so we can make sure we have everybody in agreement with that.
Very good.
That'd be acceptable?
Of course. Of course. You may want... To take note that the final report is going to be distributed today.
Okay. No, thank you. Okay, then after that, the only item left on our agenda is the GM report.
First item on the GM report on the OBMP implementation plan update, my note is here to let the pool know that the IUA certification of the Supplemental Environmental Impact Report for your implementation plan update is being delayed to July. We, as you know, we're on a very tight time frame to get this done for you, and we need a few more days to respond to the comments, and that puts us past the IUA deadlines for getting this on to June. We regret that, but at the same time, we don't think it harms the parties, as considering that there is no implementation plan update on storage management or anything else at this point in time. So that's the status of that. I'm happy to answer any questions.
No, Peter, I would like to say that we are very close on getting our implementation plan out. We are going to have another meeting early next week, if not Monday. And I would tell you, I think we should be out in days. I think we're that close. So I think that's some good news. Hopefully
that's
we can have it out very early next week, if not by the end. But hopefully early
very,
in the week.
Very good. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody's work on that. Nothing new to report on the Ag Pool contest. We do have the hearing set for June 16th. And finally, on the work from home status, at this point, we don't have any new guidance that would cause us to change the way we do business. So wanted to let you know that at least through the month of May, the Watermaster-related meetings will be held as we're holding this meeting via GoTo. We are looking at ways of establishing the ability to have people meet face-to-face. We're not there yet. And we're very mindful of guidance by the government, both federal, state, and county. And when we're ready for that, we'll let you know. We do believe that meetings face-to-face are more productive. We'll let you know as soon as we can host meetings and what size of gathering we'll be able to host.
Well, we're looking forward to that.
And that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
No, thank you, Peter. Any questions for Peter? Okay, hearing none, do we have any pool member comments?
John, I do. This is Katie Dinger, Ontario. I just wanted to let the group know that this is planned to be my last appropriative pool meeting. I anticipate moving on to new adventures in early June, so this would be my last appropriative pool meeting. I've been in this Watermaster family now for just a couple months shy of 4 years, and it's been a really great experience for me. I've learned a lot. I appreciate those of you who have helped me grow and taught me various things, and I just really appreciate it, and I genuinely am going to miss this basin and this group of people. So thank you to all of you, and keep in touch.
All right, thank you, Katie. I'm sure we'll still be talking to you. Any other full member comments?
Just appreciation for all Katie has provided into the approved pool process. She's been a stellar member of our pool.
Thank you, Justin. Any other? Okay, hearing none. We already had our confidential session. Future meetings are on the agenda, and that adjourns our meeting for today. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate everybody's patience and getting through this today.
Thank you.
Thank you all.